Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. We're back to talk about the Spurs game. I've got some guests here with me today. I have Tomlin and Chris Young. Chris, you said something to me after the game when I seen you about Dick Turpin wearing a mask at least.
Yeah, it would have been if they'd won, I think, if Buckley had turned it up. Well, you've got to say Spurs completely dominated things. They didn't have loads of clear-cut chances, but a welcome sight to see Sunderland battle back and get a point that they probably ill-deserved.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like dark days, Tom, just yet, does it?
No, not at all, but it's a long time since I've seen the first 5 minutes of a game where a team's come at us like that. You very rarely see it in any Premiership game. You know, Maloney must have made like 3 or 4 point-blank saves within the first 3 or 4 minutes. You know, at the end of the day, we did like fantastically well to get a point. Although I thought that, you know, the team that came on to finish the game, there was a few players who came on us, so we've got a claim for a starting spot now.
Mm-hmm. I guess straight away, Gareth Barker, come to you, that the positives that jump, you know, the leap out at you again are refusing to lose. 3 from 4 games now. Obviously, we lost to QPR. In the other games, we've been in losing positions. I think a lot of people are starting to sort of decide that we'd probably have 0 points with last season's team. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's a common thing that people suggest, isn't it?
Possibly, seems to be true. Rings true,
possibly
though,
at this stage of the season, yeah. That probably is the case. I think they'll look at it and go, you know, the time, you can see the times we've scored goals in games to get us back into it, to get the points in late on in the first game and on Saturday, and then they'll be annoyed that they're conceding goals at stupid times right before half time and, you know, right after half time and right after kick off. So, you know, it's frustrating that they haven't been able to iron out those little things. But yeah, it was, you know, it was nice to see the fact that they stuck in and got themselves something from a game. It sounds as though they got battered in. So
yeah, encouraging, Chris, as well, wasn't it? Gareth just mentioned the time of the response there, because Tom was saying how frantic the game was, and they come out like a train, Tottenham, didn't they?
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, when they scored, a lot of people probably thought, God, this is going to be a long afternoon. But the response straight from kickoff, you can't ask for anything more.
No, you can't do it. And I think even going to the second equaliser, I think in the 10-15 minutes prior to that, Sunderland were looking really leggy. They'd been chasing Tottenham's midfield around all afternoon, and understandably that taking its toll. But they kicked on again. As Tom says, the couple of subs helped. But they battled back and got that equaliser.
Yeah, well, as I say, the game was frantic, and I was wondering in the first half if Spurs could keep up that intensity, and it's something that the manager thought as well, is Gus.
I think it was the weather and it was the intensity of the first half an hour. It was interesting what you say, because I told the players at half time, I don't think Spurs is going to be able to keep that intensity. I didn't say nothing about us, of course, no, but the idea was to make sure that they knew that the more the game was going on and it was an option, it would be spaces to go and try to attack, and that would happen at the end.
Substitute significant in that respect, Chris, because as Gus said, as I wondered whether Tottenham could keep that intensity up, as you just said yourself there, Sunderland players were also leggy because of all the chasing about, so it was good that you could bring players fresh off the bench to make an impact. We've said it before.
Yeah, I think the key difference is, as well, you can pick players off the bench now for certain situations. Last year, I mean, if you look at the vast number of substitutions, it was Craig Garner to run around a lot and have a pot shot from distance, or it was bring on an extra striker, and that was pretty much the limit, wasn't it? Unless Jaccarini was amongst the substitutes. This year, you can be far more selective. Sunderland didn't need another striker bringing on Saturday. They needed some control in the middle of the park, and that's why Gomez and Jaccarini were both brought on, and those were the two who really gave Sunderland some control for the first time in the game.
I was kind of pleased with myself, because 5 minutes before I made that change, that was a change I said I thought he should have made, Tom. But how encouraged are you? Like Chris said there, I mean, I don't want to start slagging off old players and the like, but, you know, when you have players who can come on and just bring some control back into the game, as a fan, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we didn't sign probably as many players as some people might have liked in the transfer window, but I definitely think in most areas of the team we've got sort of quality rather than quantity. I think it's only the striking positions where we're leaving ourselves a little bit thin, particularly if something happens to Wigan with, you know, Fletcher being out of form and Altidore, you know, in all truth, still to prove himself and, you know, start scoring a few goals. But I think Buckley and Jaccarini both had claims to start the last couple of games. I thought Buckley played really well against Man United, and then he got dropped for QPR. Jaccarini came on against QPR and did quite well, and then he obviously has played twice in Italy's starting lineup. And when he came on Saturday, he made a difference straight away. I also think Jordi Gomez is a Poirier type of player, you know, sort of intelligent sort of midfielder who can move the ball around. So I think all three of them have got claims. And like we touched on before the programme started, there's this situation with Rodwell, who obviously is an excellent player, and the only way he's going to get better and get match fit after his spell at Man City is by playing every week. But conversely, there's also the argument, is he justifying his place? And that's a delicate situation for Poirier to address over the next couple of weeks.
Certainly is. We'll come to some of them points now, because Tom's trying to condense the whole agenda in about 30 seconds now. But Gareth, there was a case, wasn't there, certainly for Jacarina and Buckley to start. Buckley again showed, you know, because quite often somebody make a debut look positive. He's came on again, he's looked good again, and it's competition for places, I guess, but both those players are going to be chopping at the bit of start.
Yeah, definitely. You feel as though, I don't know, that maybe Buckley maybe have more of a chance of starting again than Jacarini, because he seems really to like using Jacarini.
He's mentioned Jacarini all week, though. We were sort of thinking he was leaning towards.
I was surprised he didn't start. Yeah, I thought he'd start ahead of Alvarez.
Yeah,
I was surprised. But he's going to want to get Alvarez involved probably as soon as he possibly can, isn't he? But yeah, Jacarini's, you know, one of those, like you were saying last week, Gus, about him, he's almost like a new player, that cliche. But he has been quite exciting to see, and he looks as though he could be the player we'd hoped he'd be this season, like he wasn't last season.
Which makes him all surprising, though, doesn't it? Because, I mean, he must have seen something in training, Chris, where he's thought Alvarez, right, okay, I'm going to put this guy straight in.
Yeah.
Because we talk about Jacarini needing time to settle in, and then he throws somebody else straight into it.
Yeah, I think they'd done all the fitness tests on Alvarez at the start of last week, and it showed that he was about one of the fittest players in the squad. So I think that was a pleasant surprise for them, which perhaps was one reason for throwing him straight into the fold, I suppose. But he would have been a bit of an unknown quantity for Spurs too. I think the big question mark over Jacarini is where you play him. Do you play him centrally, or do you play him wide? I don't think there's an easy answer for either of them, really. I think if you play him in the middle of the park, you've got this fear that he's going to get out-muscled.
Which he did, to be fair, quite a lot.
Which he does do. And if you play him out wide, he's not really got the pace to get beyond full-backs. But then, if you can tuck him in from that left-hand side, you get Van Aanholt overlapping down the left, who has got the pace. I think the best position we've seen him, I think, was probably under Kevin Ball for those few games where he's in the number 10 role.
Definitely.
But will Gus play like that? I'm not so sure. I think he likes this system that he plays at the moment.
I think
diamond on the horizon for anybody.
it's the new trendy one, the diamond that's coming in.
But can you fit Adam Johnson into a diamond, though? That's the question.
I don't know.
He'd probably have to compete for that number 10.
Yeah, it would be. But I think you know, with Jacarini, like you say, he hasn't got blistering pace to get past people. But what he is quite good at is taking up good positions of space to receive the ball on a break. So maybe that's why he's useful as a substitute, because he gets into these little gaps, even in deeper areas, and then he can carry the ball really well over a distance. And then, you know, we look quite dangerous. If you look at some of the goals we've scored back end of last season and the start of this one, he's been involved where he's carrying the ball from deep areas on the break. So
Wickham second at
Man City
perfect,
and
exactly.
The goal at Birmingham where he passed it on for Wickham as well. And then the chance at the weekend that he created for Buckley was sort of similar, didn't he put Van Aanholt in for that one?
Yes.
So
I think he came on with a specific role on Saturday. I think he'd been told to like just attack their back four, because basically they had a comfortable afternoon. You know, Wickham was a bit like in and out with Kabul. I think he could have bullied Kabul a lot more, and I think when Jacarini came on, you know, it was the first time during the match that their back four, the middle two in particular, had like a lot to think about.
I guess there's an argument to say, you know, Alvarez could play in that there's a forward most three in the middle, and then Jacarini wide. I guess if you want to accommodate them both, that might be the best way to do it. I don't know.
Well, after the match, Gus was asked about his decision to throw Alvarez straight into the side. This is what he said.
He got kick a few times. He got a couple of knocks. He tried his best. Probably, I need to be honest, not the best game for him to start in England. You know, you would like another game a little bit more calm, more controlled. Even the one against Man United was totally different, was a little bit more calm. Today was incredible. I mean, the pace, the breaks, the runnings, the options, the chances, the opportunity, the quality as well. There was a couple of shots that were really different quality. And another day, you know, Lamela scored in the crossbar and the game is over. And today it went just an inch over the possibility of going in and give us a chance to come back in the game.
It was apparent early on, Chris, that Alvarez wasn't getting the grips with the defensive side of his game. Danny Rose in particular was seeing a lot of joy, wasn't he?
Yeah, Rose was Spurs' outlet ball, wasn't he, in the first 20-25 minutes. They just kept looking for him all day because they knew they were getting a 2-on-1 against Virginie. I think that's probably why he swapped Alvarez and Johnson's flanks midway through the half.
That's something else I called, I'm sure, for myself, because I never get anything right. And the substitution and the fact I said to Michael, who was sitting next to it before, says he's going to change Johnson and Alvarez over. He's got to here.
But I think he's not got a reputation, as I was saying earlier, he's not got a reputation in Italy for being lazy or anything like that. So I think it's just learning that side of the game. You don't really get that in Serie A because the pace of the game is so much slower.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a lazy issue, Tom, did it? It seemed like just game awareness.
No, I mean, to be honest, the game on Saturday reminded me very much of the Southampton game last season.
In January,
It took us like 20 minutes, half an hour to even get anywhere near the pace of the opposition.
Manager, of course.
Fortunately, we're still in the, we're still in the game. I think... Spurs, the type of football they play is what Poirier wants to play when he's got as many players with similar ability and pace in particular, because the speed of the breaks from the back all the way down the pitch was just incredible. And that's one of the things where people like Buckley, I remember Poirier said a couple of weeks ago, he says the best thing about Buckley is he can take you down the pitch in seconds. And I think that was something we lacked in the early stages of the match. We were just getting totally overrun.
I think as well, you've got to, for all we're analysing Sunderland, you've got to give Spurs a lot of credit for how well they played.
Ericsson too.
They were superb. Yeah,
Ericsson was superb.
Ericsson and Lamella and everything went through Dembele as well. So. Mm.
Yeah, they were.
You've got to give them credit.
They were excellent.
Lee Cattermole as well, Gareth. I mean, we've been singing his praises. I still thought he'd done okay, but he got pulled out of position a lot. Possibly down to just being overrun in the midfield. I'm not sort of blaming him for it, but it was noticeable.
Well, I was at a wedding, so...
Well, you're not meant to say that. Just go with it.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to pass comment on whether or not...
I forgot when I asked you the question. Yeah, to be honest, I should have asked somebody else. But
yeah, from what I heard, Rodwell...
And researched. And
researched. Well, I have watched the two available outlets that I use on Sky and BBC to watch the highlights. So I've seen extended highlights, but you know what it's like when you're watching that. You can't repeat that sort
of
thing.
Tom, I'll ask you. Callum always pulled out of position a lot more than he has been recently.
Yeah, I think he was, but it was just the game started. I think all the Sunderland players were taken aback by the speed at which Spurs started, and certainly the crowd were. Say it's a long time since I've seen a team start so quickly. Normally it takes 5-10 minutes to warm up. And I think Callum probably needed more support around him. I thought Larson struggled a little bit pace wise, and Rodwell is still trying to find the pace of games in general terms. So it wasn't one of Cattermole's better games, but I thought again towards the end when the substitutions were made, Cattermole looked a lot better when the support around him was better.
Yeah, Rodwell's getting to that sort of stage now, Chris, isn't it? That game mark where people have said he'll start to show more dominance in games. And it's one of those you don't want to get in his back, but how patient can you be? It's kind of like the stage now where you think, are we going to get a little bit more?
It's tough, isn't it? Because he arrives with this huge price tag. He arrives with a big reputation. He's obviously been, along with Barini, the two key players that Poyet was looking to bring in this summer. But he's had a long time out, hasn't he? He's gone 11 months without starting a Premier League game. So it's going to take him half a dozen minimum. But I see where everyone's going with it. It is unforgiving, the Premier League. You've got to try and hit the ground running.
And it's another reason why I thought he might have refrained from playing Alvarez, because we've still got another player in there who's trying to adapt to his new
system. I think that's a fair point, yeah.
But I think defensively, Tom, I mean, to give him some credit, he's a big lad, a big presence in there. And I think, we used the phrase last season, slice through like butter a lot, when our midfield's quite lightweight and teams were going straight through us. Yeah. Adam Johnson made the point at the end of the game that, they weren't carving us open as such, even though they were moving the ball about very quickly. And Rodwell, there was a couple of times he put important tackles in, I thought. So he was sort of relevant in the defensive aspect.
Oh, yeah, I think you can definitely say that he's got this potential that everybody raves about. I mean, it was interesting reading a couple of weeks ago that the Everton scout who sort of discovered him and had a lot to do with him said that he thinks ultimately his best position is as a centre-back. But obviously that's not really a concern for us at the moment, because he's being bought as a...
We want the box, not the defender.
As a midfield player, but I think you've got to give him a little bit of time, maybe another 2 or 3 games, and if he hasn't done it by then you've got to think about the, you know, for the benefit of the team, really, mm-hmm. when they, you know, results are
paramount. Like, I mean, like you say, I guess, you know, who does he bring in? Because we're at the risk of going lightweight again then. Yeah. I think you can afford to do it when you're chasing again.
I think there's question marks over, you know, quite a few players playing week in, week out, and other players who haven't been playing, you know, regularly so far coming into the fold. I think it's going to take Poirier, you know, probably another month before he gets basically the midfield that suits the type of football he wants to play.
I think that is a bit of a danger, that with the options that he's got now, where it's a sticker. He's like, I want to keep the same solid side, mm-hmm. and give it a chance to work. And then if that doesn't work, then yeah. if he starts, well, I'm going to have to, you know, chuck those yeah. two in, take those two out. That doesn't work. The next, does
that
he stick with that?
Lead on the desperation, you know, couldn't
it? Does he start just like a little bit when he went 3-5-2? The back end of last season, he was trying something different because he wasn't getting anything out of what he had. Yeah. He was trying to do the best he could with what he had. Now he's got more to work with this time. Mm. But it's almost that, you know,
you
like
need points
say,
on board before
you start
messing about.
Start messing about. But if that becomes, like you say, a desperation, try and get some points to make sort of changes that he doesn't want to but feels he has to try and get something, then I guess that could be a little bit of a hindrance with the options that he's got.
His thinking at the start of the season was very much try and keep the same team shape on same sort of team intact from the end of last season. I think he did that as much as possible. Obviously Van Aanholt came in for Alonso and Rodwell for Colback, but other than the Barini position, which hasn't been addressed yet, I think you look at that team at the start of the season, it was six or seven of those who'd finished at the end of last season, and he wanted to give that team a chance to bed in. He thought that was the best chance of getting points on the board early on.
And do you think he's going to stick with this midfield three the way it is there? Would you say Larson's at the sort of most risk?
I think the interesting thing is if you're going to stick Alvarez out wide or Giaccarini out wide, I think you probably need someone else in the middle of the park who, with a bit more creativity, because neither Alvarez or Giaccarini are lightning quick. So maybe they do need someone else in there to bridge the gap with the front one or three, however you view it.
Maybe, you know, if you take Larson out and put Rodwell slightly deeper and have someone like Alvarez or Giaccarini play in front of them, you're giving Rodwell more responsibility. You know, he's in that position, he's going to see probably more of the ball than he is at the moment. Yeah. He's a bit rock in the hard place. Sometimes he gets like a bit piggy in the middle, you know, stuck between, you know, the lines, and the ball's passing him by, and maybe he'll be on the ball more in a deeper position.
Well, Michael Proctor keeps making the point now. You know how Catamol keeps coming to receive the ball. He still doesn't think he looks comfortable with that. And he can't get his head around why somebody like Rodwell doesn't do that, and then the players can change positions. Not Rodwell player there, but it's just the players can easily change positions, you know, once they're in the ascendancy or they're starting to attack. I think possibly, because that you know, two birds, one stone, maybe then you're taking Catamol, who doesn't always look comfortable doing that, off the ball, and then you're getting Rodwell on the ball.
I think
give him a chance to get into the game.
I think where you'd look to change the team again maybe is at home to Tottenham. Maybe you'd want Larson in there and not play Alvarez in a three, or someone like that, and then away, maybe at Burnley away from home this weekend. They might be looking to, yes, they're away from home, but it's a game where they'll be looking for 3 points definitely, so maybe that's one where he might risk taking Larson out and putting someone more attacking in that middle area, just to give him that option. I don't know.
I just wonder whether they might put Gomez in that midfield area, because he's got that left foot, and he hasn't really got that. Since Colback's gone out, he hasn't got that left-footed central midfielder, and Gomez provides that.
And it helps link up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you do that.
Yeah, I think he's
particularly if you've got a right footer on the left on the left flank.
Yeah, his little cameo so far, Gomez has looked good, and as I say, I think he's a Poirier type of player. I thought at times on Saturday the midfield looked a little bit crowded, as though they weren't entirely sure what the role was. Whether it was that,
I
or
think
whether
that's
it was just
dispersed players pulling them all over.
Yeah, they looked like they were caught between whether to sit back or go forward and support Wickham.
Yeah,
just caught in two minds and did neither.
Yeah, because I think that's still where, you know, that's our weakest area of play. When we hit that last third of the pitch, he was just so, Wickham was like so isolated, and you know, just the lack of pace and the one player being asked to cover so much ground,
and that was noticeable as well, wasn't it? Because we started, I wouldn't say a direct, but we started to use Wickham as an outball a lot more than we have done previously. Mm, yeah. To be fair, he took a lot of pressure off the midfield at that time, and he put in a really good performance, didn't he?
Yeah. I think overall with this midfield scenario, because I think, you know, the defence and the striking positions, basically there's not a lot of competition really in most areas, they're more or less picking themselves. But I think with the midfield areas, the way we've played this season so far, it's great that we've stuck in and got the points, but we've never been outstanding. We played really well in patches, I thought, against Man United. So I think Poyet's still got the excuse to, if he wants to drop people, drop them.
Is anybody worried? Are we being too positive by saying, you know, we're managing to rescue a point from the jaws of defeat and the like, but are people hoping for more? People worried?
I thought the QPR game disappointed me because it was another one of these situations where QPR hadn't won. They were being criticised, and then we turned up in the
beat us
1-0. Yeah. And I thought we didn't play badly, and we could have, probably a draw would have been the fairest result, but I still thought we were a bit flat. And I think Burnley on Saturday is going to be very interesting from that point of view, because if you can beat Burnley, you've got a couple of games that are winnable after that. But we need to start beating teams without being arrogant about it, that we're almost expecting to beat, that we need to beat.
And we never do.
Often don't.
Well, yeah. That's what Sunderland do, don't they? Go away from home to a newly promoted team and lose every season. It's
The last time we played Burnley down there, we got beat 1-0. Yeah. You know,
Wasn't that three? Didn't we get stuffed or something off them down
3-1,
there?
3-1, I think.
3-1, yeah. I think Nugent scored, and Anton Ferdinand gave away a ridiculous penalty after about 5 minutes.
That doesn't sound like Anton. But Conor Wickham, Chris, I just mentioned there, he's, I think, possibly, you know, he's lacking his final decision making. Doesn't quite know when to shoot. Sometimes rushes his shot. Doesn't see the final pass. You're not suddenly expecting him to know that, because he would be, you know, he would be a significant player if all that sort of clicked into place. But we're hoping that he's going the right way about it.
Still, he's only 21. Yeah, though. This is the thing that you forget about him, because he's been around so long. I think that the good thing about Wickham is he starts to learn how to use his physique, and he unsettles defenders because of it. Even when he had no service really on Saturday at all, but he was awkward for the Spurs centre halves to mark whenever the ball went in or around him, and that's not, you don't always get that with a Fletcher. So if Sunderland can give him a bit more service, you've got to play him in that central role at the moment. He's got to be the first choice at the moment.
Yeah, well, Gus was asked about Connor's performance after the game.
Yeah, it was the most difficult one so far. Yes. Yeah, I needed to play Connor in the middle. I think Connor was exceptional today. He was very, very good in everything he done, apart from not getting that goal. But he held the ball well. He was strong. He dribbled. He went in behind. He went short. It was really a class act from Connor. Look, I'm going to tell you, that's why he played, and that's why he's there. Not because of me, because of him. So it's great to him.
Okay, just echoing what we said there, we mentioned that he held the ball up very well, needs to improve on his decision-making. There isn't quite the link-up player there yet, Chris. As Adam Johnson was saying after the game about Adebayor for Spurs, how it was hard to play against because he was holding the ball up and he had all these Tottenham players, attacking players, buzzing around him. We don't quite have that. Now, that could be just because of the standard of the opposition, and it also just hasn't quite clicked.
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. I just don't think it has clicked in with that front three yet. And it all goes back to finding a replacement for Barini, doesn't it? Everyone's sick of talking about him, but that's the thing. There isn't a like-for-like replacement for Barini in the squad at the moment, and it's adapting Sunderland's attacking play to do without that.
I mean, Tom, you were sort of, I'm not going to say critical, but you posed the question before, why didn't we have a sort of a plan B for Barini in place? But I guess it's one of those, you know, it shows why I want him, because he fit the system so well. And Alvarez is a player who came in. Gus was clear by saying, you know, that there weren't like-for-like players. However, you know, it isn't easy to go and find somebody who just slots straight in.
No, I just think, you know, we spent so much time chasing Barini, it would have just been nice to think there was some sort of a plan B there. But I suppose, you know, Gus was prepared to like take it down to, you know, the very last minute to see whether there was any chance of getting him or not. I think Barini himself, in the ideal world that doesn't exist, would probably prefer to play in a central striking role, you know, which if he had been at the club with the midfield players we've got now, that, you know, certain games that might have been an option to play him as a striker. But I think obviously the way Wickham finished last season, he deserves his place in the side. I just hope that, you know, within the next couple of games he can maybe get himself a goal and get his confidence up. I think he did really well on Saturday generally, but his decision making a couple of times, particularly there was one incident going through
just
towards the north stand,
just
that little final pass, you know, when he should have given it away. But it's a very lonely role. It's a, you know, anybody who's played that role at any level of football knows it. You know, it's a job against the world, really. I thought he did really well overall.
Yeah, and importantly, Gareth, because one thing we've criticised Conor for in the past is that, you know, he didn't put the work in. You know, he was losing the ball easily for somebody as big as he is, and you know, that's changed, hasn't it? It's credit to him.
Mm, definitely. It's clicked, hasn't it? Finally, and, you know, hopefully, yeah, I think he's done all right when he's played from the left out of position this season. He's done a lot of good work on the ball, like holding it, taking the pressure off. He's got his chance through the middle. So hopefully, you know, he keeps it up and we'll start to see maybe a couple of games against teams who are around us or will be around us, like Burnley, and who have we got? Swansea, who've actually started quite well.
Yeah,
Stoke. So those are three games, you know, where you'd hope we'd have more opportunities to get the best out of them.
Probably draw them all.
You know, yeah. If he played through the middle against West Brom and QPR, although I thought Fletcher actually did all right at QPR, he was getting a lot of stick, but I thought that was his best game of the season for us. Maybe it would have been a bit different, but I guess it goes back to filling that role on the left that we didn't do in the summer when we didn't.
Some of the coaches to decide, but like somewhere along the line, they've got to have something in place to give him more support more regularly, because he was very isolated a lot of the time on Saturday.
Was that not just because Spurs put so much pressure on?
There's an element.
Yeah,
isn't there?
There is an element of that, but I think we've seen that in several of the games, though, haven't we? Where that front three, the connection between them, is it not quite clicked so far as it did at the end of last season?
It's funny, isn't it, because you go back over the years and, you know, we've always had these, you know, these mouth-rotting sort of situations, or, you know, we're going to have Fletcher and Sessegnon and Johnson and McLean, and that was going to be brilliant, and then that never happened. And then, you know, even last year, it clicked towards the end, but... And then Barini kind of came into it eventually, sort of midway through the season. But I wouldn't say that front three was last season was devastating. And then, you know, you could go back to the selection problem that they had when they had Ben Chan and Welbeck, and they couldn't really seem to get them all playing together, even though he wanted to. So
Life of a Sunderland fan.
Yeah, you've got these options, and you
think
boring
if all these were sold, wouldn't it?
Loads of players. You don't know where's Alvarez.
It's like a carrot dangling, isn't it? You think, oh, this is going to click in a place.
No one knows where to play Jaccarini. No one knows where to play Sessegnon. No one knows where to play any of these players that we've got. So, yeah, it's easy, isn't it? Football, apparently.
I mean, what I like is that every single season, you always say, there's going to be one game where this clicks and somebody's going to come up here and get a good iron. And how often is that? When was the last time that happened? Cardiff, perhaps?
Yeah, possibly Cardiff.
That's like the Fletcher situation. You know, at the end of the day, he cost £12 million. And when he first came, he looked decent. He held the ball up well. He sprayed it around quite well. But he's just, because of his injuries and, you know, different situations, the fact we've struggled as a club and as a team, I think his confidence has just shot to bits, you know. I mean, he came on for Scotland there against Germany. He looked decent when he came on. So, you know, I think there's still a role for him there, particularly in the current situation. We haven't got a lot to choose from, to be honest. But pre-season, people were saying, you know, he'd had a good season, close season, fitness-wise, and he hadn't been, you know, going away too much on holiday and getting himself right. But he's looked very sluggish so far.
I think he just needs a goal. He desperately needs a goal.
That's the thing, though. The way we play, he needs to probably to get one. He's going to have to work a little bit harder phases of play up to the chance he's going to get going to get him that goal, because the way we play doesn't suit what he wants.
No. And I think when you look at when he scored the goals, he had Sessegnon just in behind him, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been quite a big fan of Fletcher, but he sort of, you know, his injury problems in the last season, it's maybe a bit harsh to judge him, but he just, like you say, sluggish, I think's the word, and a little bit, you know, I'd just like to see him make the centre backs, when you're playing up front on your own, I think you just got to work the centre backs a bit better, and I just don't think he does that.
Are we asking a player to change his game, though?
It was a big decision to drop him completely, and it says something that, you know, I was trying to think what situation, if you didn't have Fletcher in the starting 11, what situation under Poyet would you be in where you'd think, to change the game, I'm going to bring on Fletcher.
Well, you have to go two up front.
Either two up front, which I can't really see happening, because he doesn't seem one who's going to just chuck forwards on. Either a replacement for the injured Wickham,
which and then Alador's a logical
and that,
one,
but
really?
The logical game changer.
Well, you
changer
say, but I mean, he
is,
hasn't been starting Alador
no,
over Fletcher.
But I'm saying the logical game changer between the two is Alador, because you're not going to get
settles defenders more.
You're not going to get anything different from Fletcher bringing him on, and that I think that's the thing. It's like how do you utilise him if you don't start him, and I haven't, like, you know, Fletcher's got a lot of stick start this season, and you know, some of it's a bit harsh, but it is a bit of a, seems to have just, that whole thing just seems to have petered out after he had such a brilliant start, and you know, for a variety of reasons, it's a bit of a shame.
Okay, we're going to move away from the midfield and attack now, get onto the back four. Here's what Gus said.
Well, because they are playing together. Billy's pushing hard to get in. He's really pushing hard this week. He was probably one of the best in training. But, you know, I need consistency, and for that you need to keep the same player for a while. Now, when they come in the games, fast and quick, one behind the other, then I'm sure Billy's going to have the chance to prove if he deserves to play.
Interesting, Tom, that Gus was asked about his back four looking cohesive and as one as a solid unit, and he decided to bring Billy Jones in the equation. Do you think there's anything in that?
Potentially. I thought Vigini struggled at times on Saturday. I think he's done well. You know, he did really well for us again towards the end of last season.
Bit flat-footed for the goal, first goal, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was badly out of position when the ball came over for the second goal as well. And obviously, you know, Spurs had two or three players with very, very quick feet who were playing in his area. And you know, he was struggling at times, but he's got this very confident attitude about himself. But at the end of the day, he is,
it's like a
calming
influence when he has a ball.
Yeah, he's done well overall. I thought he struggled a bit on Saturday, but I think at the end of the day, he's a centre half. We've been through this scenario over the last few years with players playing out of position. I'm not saying he can't play.
He's looked better right back in centre half for me.
Well, I don't think he's really played enough games in a confident team at centre half. But I know where you're coming from. I remember at Arsenal away, particularly last season, he struggled very badly. But I think probably in the long term, maybe Jones will come in at right back. I mean, that's what he was signed to be. But obviously, in overall terms, Virginie's hasn't done badly at right back, so he's probably just going to leave him in till maybe he's got an excuse to bring Jones in, you know.
People might question what I said there about him being a calm influence, Chris, because at times he does look like, sometimes he's not sure what to do with the ball when he has it, but he doesn't panic, is what I mean.
He does have a touch of the Nosworthy about him, doesn't he?
Yeah. But could you say Billy Jones, do you think I'm just intrigued why Gus sort of brought that up, because he wasn't asked directly about it.
Well, probably to keep Virginia on his toes, I suppose, is one thing. I thought Saturday was his poorest game since he's come back, but then he was left isolated a lot of the time by Alvarez. The thing about Jones is he's a better going forward, isn't he? And when you're only playing one striker, you need that little bit extra from your fullbacks to provide something, as Van Aanholt has shown very well going forwards. I mean, he's made a few defensive mistakes, but going forwards he's looked excellent. So I think in the long run, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Billy Jones gets the nod, because he does offer that extra dimension going forward.
Just one of those little tweaks that we're talking about that could help the team click, though, couldn't it? Something like a fullback, a change in fullback.
It's all about landing upon that right formula, isn't it? Particularly in these early days of the season.
Mm-hmm. We're happy with Van Aanholt, Tom, on the other side? I think his development's come along very nicely.
Yeah, I think people, you know, a lot of people have picked up very quickly on the, you know, the sort of mistakes he has made, but I think it's a bit unfair. He's just a young lad. He's come into a new team, and he is excellent going forward. And to be honest, in modern day football, basically like the wingers who can defend, he just needs to be able to defend like a little bit better. But I also think he needs somebody in front of him who's playing in front of him like every week, so they can get a bit of a relationship going as well. I think he's been left a bit exposed, you know, because we've chopped and changed who's sort of like playing in front of him.
I think $1.5 million as well. Yeah, that's really good business.
The age he's at as well.
Yeah.
It'll take time, won't it? Yeah. That's the thing. We've got to be careful. Like, you're not too impatient, and you know that a win takes that pressure off, doesn't it? But it is that sort of. People start, when you don't win, people start to question, you know, certain people, and the pace. I mean, I watched a bit of the Fiorentina. Genoa was on the television yesterday, and Alonso was playing, so I stuck that on, and it was like a pre-season friendly, like the pace of the game. And then you look at he came in and did all right. He had a bit of a wobble, but you know, Van Aanholt's been chucked in. He's barely played a game. He's been in England. He's been playing out in Holland, which is probably a bit quicker than the Italian game, but. Yeah,
you don't do a lot of defending, though.
You've got to give him time to learn, and he has, like you said, I think he's development in four games.
I think he could be one of the signs of the season.
The learning curve, that's quite a statement. No, you've put your neck on the line there. Finder of the season.
I really do. I think by the time, you know, if he keeps this sort of upwards trajectory going, I know it's only a few games in, but I think we've got to be equally as good as Alonso, as I say.
I think we've got to be patient with Van Aanholt. I think we've got to be patient with this whole situation. You know, Poirier is the first manager, you know, for a while who's had a proper game plan and who seems to know exactly what he wants to do.
It's keeping your nerve though when you're not winning, Tom, isn't it? That's a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got to, you know, this is his first full season in charge, in effect, because like last season he came in when we had, what was it, 1 point from 8 games or something. And he was fighting fires for the whole season. I mean, after the League Cup final, you know, it looked as though the position wasn't going to be able to be salvaged, you know, went on that bad run. And then, obviously, we came good. So, close season with the transfers, you know, with the signings. As I say, it's really just the striking positions where I think we should have done more, could have done more. But generally, I think we've got a better quality of player. And I think everybody's got to be patient with the manager, with the new players, you know, let's see what sort of team he comes up with when it all settles down, when he finds out exactly who he wants in and who should be playing where.
It's never going to be explosive this season anyway, was it? It's all a case of steady progression.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks steady. That's what it's been, steady. I mean, it's a shame that they haven't picked up, you know, a positive result, like a more positive result, a win in the league. Mm-hmm. But, you know, generally it's been all right.
It might be steady and dull for the whole season, but I think that's probably progress.
It would be certainly progress.
We've got, like, points
season
against Man United and Spurs, who we didn't get points against. Yeah. It's only the QPR game so far that's been disappointing. We've got this chance on Saturday if we can beat Burnley, and you've got like a sequence of winnable games again, you know, before the rough stuff comes in again.
If they got through the next round of the cup and, you know, got 6 points from those three league games coming up, then I'm sure he'd be absolutely delighted with the start of the season. Yeah. But you run out of games to make it a good start of the season if you don't win them, don't you? That's the thing. And that's when I remember O'Neill, then when his first full season in charge, we had that run about 7 or 8 games at the start of the season where didn't we draw 6 or 7?
Out of the first five, I think, yeah.
And it was really, really awful, dour football. And,
this isn't that.
Never really quite recovered. Mm. Yeah, this is, you know, it's got a different vibe about it.
You can tell with the atmosphere in the stadium, I think.
They could have won it as well. It was Buckley's chance at the end. I mean, obviously that would have been an absolutely massive robbery, but, you know, I couldn't care less. Yeah, couldn't care less.
And you're enjoying going to the games again, Tom, aren't you? When you're having your pint before the game and actually enjoying going.
Particularly, you know, now he's sort of starting afresh, as you might say, and brought some decent players in. I think it's quite intriguing, actually, to see what happens, because, you know, as I say, some of these players who've been on the bench and, you know, the three who came on Saturday have got justifiable claims to starting games. And then you've got, you know, what will happen with Alvarez, will Rodwell come good? It's a healthy situation. Just January, the priority's got to be I know everybody's looking for them, but a decent striker to come in and give us a bit more up front.
I think Rodwell will definitely get there. I think he's proven quality player, isn't he? For me, I don't think there's any doubt that he'll eventually work. I think
the question is just when.
Patience.
He's here for 5 years. I mean, people always get frustrated about loan deals and people leaving after a year, 18 months or whatever. He's signed a 5-year deal, so you know, it might be tough at the start, but if he's as good as he can be, then what a player we've got for 4 or 5 years potentially.
Absolutely. I think Graham Anderson made the point last week, didn't he, saying you look at this team and you think it's only going to get better.
Yeah.
But we need a win.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Question of the week. We brought that back finally this week. Yeah. So I've got to let Gareth talk you through.
Yeah. So
talk you through the crack.
We got a lovely prize to give away this week. It's a book by Michael Water called Up There, The Northeast Football Boom and Bust.
Courtesy of A Love Supreme.
Yeah. Courtesy of Martin. He gave us the book to give away, which is nice of him. He's probably already got a copy himself or something like that. I imagine that's probably why he's passed it on.
Oh, he's just being generous for the listeners.
That could be one of the reasons as well. We've got a Facebook page now. I don't know if we've done a podcast since we launched a Facebook
page.
We might not have because of the international break.
We just let Craig get on with it.
Yeah, Craig does a Facebook. So if you go, you can go obviously to the website as well, wisemensay.co.uk, and there's a link to it on there, I think, probably. But if not, just search for us on Facebook, Wise Men Say Podcasts, and you can get involved with all of the stuff there as well. So we had a few answers on Facebook. There was a lot of just get his lass a job in Primark type tweets.
Yeah, get to the question first. Remind people.
Oh yeah, the question. Yeah, that's a good point, Stephen. Well done there. What was the question? Let me find it on here and I'll tell you.
Considering that.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Considering tweeting Barini's last didn't work, what else could we have done to persuade him to sign? A lot of jobs in Primark thing, which, you know, even in context is, you know, silly, so I'm not going to read any of them out. Grant Robson in True Godfather style. He left a horse's head in his bed.
He didn't use the word head, did he?
He said napper.
Yeah.
Would have been an offer he couldn't refuse.
You're listening, Chris and Tom, because we need a winner.
Neil, at the White Cafu on Twitter. Bank holiday, you've taken Fabio Breen to Diggerland, followed by a lovely lamb lunch in the centre of Durham. That gets extra points because it's an Alan Partridge reference. Richard James Purden, he could have offered his lass a job at the beach house, and because they're short on waiting staff now, D. Keating has left. Kia said, we could have got my nan to knit him another atrocious jumper to add to his collection. He'd appreciate it. It was the Canio with the bad jumpers, wasn't it? But I don't recall Barini ever being in a poo jumper.
It was
jumper.
Like a tracksuit top, this loud tracksuit top thing.
Yeah, that's what they all got. Let's have a look on the other Twitter thing and find them, because some people swooped in with late entries. You got to get in sooner, but I'll allow it this week.
Because we're short on quality.
Short on quality. Yeah, exactly. Millie Molly Mandy, who runs a lovely Chinese takeaway, said should feed him basically. Food is the way to a man's heart, and it is very nice there. So can I give it a shout? Chinese Kitchen, get yourself there, Stanton Road. So I'm expecting something extra next time I go up there. Gain more Primark based answers. Jackie White's market based answers. Greg's loyalty card and a trolley dash around Jackie White's market. That was from Tom Guntrip. David Parker suggests bringing in the A team. I don't know if that would have worked. Kieran Thompson, sing You'll Never Walk Alone before kickoff instead of Wise Men Say, and hopefully he won't spot the difference. Lawmaster 77, appropriately named considering the answer, stalk him. That's just, yeah, fair enough. And I think that's probably it. Need to do better. There was one serious
scrape
one,
a barrel, mind,
but
yeah.
I won't. He's won Erechner's Wembley goal and goals against Mags and Bronze around the ground after naming the South Stand the Barini. That's not a bad one, and that's it really. So, has anyone got any favourites from that selection?
Horse's Head one for me, I think. Yeah.
Horse's Head was pretty
just
good.
Just the Italian link and everything.
Yeah,
I know he shopped in Waitrose, so I don't think he'd be attracted to Jackie White's mark.
Did he shop in Waitrose? Did he?
They're
getting
Newcastle as well.
They're getting Waitrose and Jackie White. Did you not hear about that? No, I am joking, of course.
wasn't good, was it?
People genuinely thought there was going to be a Waitrose
the
and Jackie White.
Delivery obviously wasn't very good, Gareth, was it?
Yeah, no, I thought it was obviously very good because it was believed for a brief moment. I thought there. But yeah, let's give it to him. Then I would have gone with Neil because of the Partridge reference.
Because you love Partridge.
Well, it is. Grant Robson on Facebook, first ever winner of a question of the week from Facebook. See, it's worth getting on there. You can win things. So there you go. Grant Robson will be in touch with you and get your details. You've won the book. Well done.
Okay, cool. Right. This was Wise Men Say podcast in association with A Love Supreme. Don't forget, we're Into the Light Show with Sun FM on Thursday, where we'll be talking about who we're playing Burnley. We talked about Burnley in a lot more detail. This week, I'd like to thank my guests for coming on. Tom Lane.
Thank you.
Chris Young.
Cheers.
And thanks to Sun FM for the audio from Gus. And thanks for listening. Over and out.